It's time for the Russ Belville Show's Cannabis Q&A with Dr. Mitch Earlywine. Dr. Earlywine is a professor of psychology at the State University of New York at Albany and a leading author and researcher on cannabinoids and health, who pins the Ask Dr. Mitch column for High Times magazine. Get your questions ready in our live chat or call in to 971-533-7111 now.
Welcome back, everybody. It's time for our Cannabis Q&A. We've got Dr. Mitch Earlywine on the line. Happy New Year, Dr. Mitch.
Happy New Year to you.
We are iced over here in Portland, Oregon. Can you believe it? We've got freezing temperatures. Our roads have turned into ice rinks. I'm sure everyone in Albany is just weeping for us.
We couldn't feel worse for you, let me tell you.
Oh, I hope you had a great holiday break, and I hope you're ready to jump right back into the marijuana science.
I missed you guys a lot, so it's good to be back.
All right, folks. And remember, if you don't get enough in this short segment, you can always listen to Dr. Mitch's podcast, Burning Issues, right here on CannabisRadio.com. Who's up next on your Burning Issues podcast?
The beloved Andre special just got posted, and it's kind of a weeper, but I really hope folks will tune in because she says it like it is, and I was very moved.
All right, looking forward to that. Let's get into some of the studies that have piled up over the holiday break. This first one that I'm very interested in, Paul Armentano from Normal has just posted this on the Normal blog. You can read it at blog.normal.org, and it gets to the heart of a matter that we've kind of speculated about for a long time, and that is, how do cannabis and alcohol use affect each other? Do you legalize pot and more people start drinking, or do fewer people drink? And what does this study tell us so far?
It's intriguing because it looks like from these data, people don't really like to mix cannabis and alcohol very much. And if you think about it, you can sort of see why. It's been a concern in part because alcohol seems to slow THC metabolism in unpredictable ways, and people often find aversive. And the combination is often correlated with, at least simultaneous use, more drug-related problems. My student Sarah Smucker showed that years ago, and it seems to be replicating. But as we're finding, particularly the data from these participants were all in states where cannabis had, better laws than just the usual prohibition. We were not seeing folks claiming that they use these simultaneously, and there was not a lot of heavy drinking among the cannabis users.
You know, I've been around both almost all my life, and when I'm at marijuana events that have some sort of beer station or, bar that's available, I usually don't see them doing so well, but I'd always just attributed that to being in the marijuana thing. It's like, well, obviously these are marijuana people. Alcohol's not their thing. And I've never been able to, look at it from the other side. I played music in bars forever, but it was always places where pot was illegal. And sure, some people were sneaking out to the parking lot to smoke during the breaks or whatever, but it seemed like everybody was pretty happy with their alcohol use. So is this something that, what's going to, confirm this once and for all for us? Is it just going to take more time?
Sad but true. On the economic front, I think it's going to take a very long time to show that, in fact, states with, basically repeal marijuana prohibition aren't going to show increases in alcohol use and might actually get a substitution effect, which I think is pretty likely. But as you've, seen in the headlines lately, even after 2 years of legalization in some areas, people are still freaking out and not sure what to make of the data. But the bottom line is, too, I feel like there's a chance here to point out to folks in an education kind of way, hey, if you've got cannabis, you sure don't need alcohol. So why not enjoy all the different strains, the same wild flavors, interesting things to discuss as far as changes of consciousness, and let alcohol go be the dangerous aggression-inducing thing that it can be, unfortunately, while marijuana is in many ways the safer choice.
Interesting that you mention aggression-inducing, because that leads into our next story coming off of Yahoo News. It asks, how does marijuana affect the brain and behavior? Here's what recent studies say. And looking into this, it seems like they're trying to say that people that smoke pot tend to be more aggressive and impulsive, which that sounds completely counter to what we've always thought stereotypically about marijuana users. Can you sort this out for us?
Well, it's nice that they at least didn't have a headline that says, pot will make you kill people. And when you take a close look at this study, this in fact is self-report data on your own perception of your impulsiveness or your hostility. It's not that on days that folks used cannabis, they were punching folks in the face or anything like that. And I think there's a strange measurement issue here in that what you think of as potentially aggressive when you're using cannabis on that day is probably a lot different from what you think is potentially aggressive on a day when you're not using cannabis. So we end up with this oddball measurement and variance situation where I'm afraid prohibition has increased some of this. So you're using a substance that's potentially illegal, and then what a surprise, you're a little paranoid, and then when you're asked about hostile thoughts or paranoid thoughts, you end up reporting more of them. It's not anywhere near the idea that, oh, folks who use cannabis get more aggressive, because in fact, we've got laboratory data where people get cannabis or placebo and then get irritated on purpose in the lab by some stooge, and they're actually less aggressive than the folks who get placebo.
So this could be, if I, you know, put out a fake scenario, day one, you don't smoke pot, you're kind of an asshole. Day two, you smoke some pot, you're still the same level of asshole, but you realize it. Is that, I mean, is that what's going on?
Sad, but true. I've had the same problem with the mindfulness literature where the meditation guys actually claim they're less mindful, but I think it's just because they know they're not so mindful. And I think it's the same with this cannabis and hostility thing, is suddenly you're willing to fess up to some hostile thoughts and you take them more seriously.
Now, the next story here, coming off of Motley Fool, reiterates some of the stuff that came out of the Monitoring the Future survey, and we discussed that a couple of weeks ago when the data came out. And one of the points they try to make in this, which just kind of vexes me, is showing how, well, the drug use for tobacco and alcohol and PCP and benzodiazepines and acid and all these other drugs, cocaine and meth and heroin, all these other drugs among kids have gone down to some of their lowest levels ever. But oh no, marijuana is still remaining steady. And my first thought of that is, maybe there's a relation between those two things. What can you tell us about this?
Well, it's sad when you think here people are making some data-based decisions about some really dangerous drugs like tobacco and meth and cocaine and things like that. And then the idea that holding steady is some kind of tragedy as far as cannabis use is concerned, I understand the alarm in that. I think there were 6% of seniors in high school saying they were using daily. That's really a problem. And we want to make sure that folks get educated that that's just not a good way to spend your time at that age. And in truth, nobody should be all high all the time, right? And so the clincher here is that takes on this alarmist sort of form. How did we get, you know, these other drugs to drop? Well, we made data-based arguments that showed genuine harms. They also jump up and down about saying, and fewer people think marijuana is dangerous now. Well, they shouldn't think marijuana is all that dangerous. That's what the data are suggesting to us. So yeah. I hate to have a headline like marijuana makes teens rational, but you know, we kind of have some data in support of that.
Well, the other big number, and nobody I've seen in the mainstream media has jumped on this like I have, and that is Monitoring the Future has been asking 12th graders since 1975, if you wanted to get a hold of some pot, how easy would it be? And the number of easy to fairly easy has always been like 80 to 91%. This time, for the first time ever, it dropped below 80%. 79.5, just a skosh, but it dropped below 80%. So we've got fewer kids thinking pot is risky, yet they find it harder to get, and no more of them are using it any more often. I think that's a success.
That tax and regulate places. I mean, if my livelihood depends upon carding people and making sure they're of age, if they're going to purchase cannabis from me, what a surprise, I'm going to card them. The underground market is not particularly good at that.
Yeah. You know, when we talk about unemployment statistics, there's a feature of that where they say, you know, there's just some baseline, you know, you're never going to have 0% unemployment, right? Is there such a concept when it comes to drug use among teens or adults or anything? Is it unrealistic to think there'll be 0%? And if so, what do you think the floor is or should be?
We've actually done well with 0% things on some drugs that are just ridiculously harmless that never really make it into the media, in part because they're just so horrible. They're just such outrageous negative consequences. But then there's this wild set when you look at just standard sort of disinhibited personality, thrill seekers and stuff like that. And I think 4% with the trying is kind of revealing in that trying isn't the issue. What we should be measuring is cannabis-related problems. But then, of course, the number is going to be really, really low. And then it's hard to jump up and down to get a lot of funding and things like that.
Gotcha. Let's go on to this story here from Forbes about, and Kevin Sabet was all a Twitter about this, just excited as hell, that the DEA has eased some of the study requirements for cannabis. But if I'm not mistaken, it's only parts of cannabis, right?
See, it's CBD only, and it's really just greasing the skids for synthetic CBD. And so the whole idea that this is even cannabis study requirements is kind of misleading. It's cannabidiol study requirements. And I feel like Forbes, you know, Jacob Solomon writes a column for them. Like somebody there could have told them this headline is misleading.
Yeah, it is. And the excitement with which Kevin Sabet tweeted about this stuff made it, you know, he always likes to paint that this is the direction for medical marijuana. And now the DEA has made it easier to have real medical marijuana. But, you know, if they were going to make it easier to have real medical marijuana, they wouldn't just ease it up on CBD, would they?
In fact, you could have whole plant studies, and that's not at all eased with the current new requirements.
Okay. And one final study here, United Press International's Health News, on how glaucoma patients need better education on marijuana. And it's kind of interesting because some of my first memories of marijuana in the mainstream were Saturday Night Live jokes about, you know, marijuana for glaucoma. And it seems to be one of the first things between that and cancer nausea or chemo nausea that people think of as medical marijuana. But what are the glaucoma patients getting wrong here?
Well, I think the interpretation of these data suggests something too about perceptions of glaucoma's appropriate treatment. Glaucoma treatment has really made incredible leaps and strides since the 1970s when those jokes were first told. And we do have cannabis-based eye drops that are stellar in part because they keep pressures down and treat glaucoma for a longer duration. You know, back when Bob Randall was using cannabis to control his glaucoma, he had to use it every 3 hours or so, or the pressures weren't controlled. And I think everybody should know that who has glaucoma. If you look at these data, a lot of people endorse the idea that they think marijuana is probably a good treatment for glaucoma, when in fact it's probably not the best. Yet there's a subset of folks who really don't respond well to the eye drops, and I really feel like they need to have cannabis available if they, you know, if they would like to have it.
Okay. Well, folks, that's all the time we've got with Dr. Mitch for now. But if you want to get a question in that we can talk about here on the show, you can always email Dr. Mitch at 420research@gmail.com. That's 420research@gmail.com. And of course, tune into the Burning Issues podcast here on CannabisRadio.com and learn even more. Dr. Mitch, Happy New Year to you and yours, and we'll talk to you next week.
You too, man. Thanks a lot.
When we come back, we'll have time for a radical rant, talking about the personal toll of marijuana activism.
This is the Russ Belville Show on CannabisRadio.com.